Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Nate, we'll get into the latest of main event Jey Uso trying to acclimate himself to Raw. Not subtle, but not sped up, not rushed turn of Drew McIntyre, which I am enjoying at this point, and I will compliment in a bit. And more with Gunther and Chad Gable. A lot of things to talk about on tonight's show. But let's start with recency bias, and that is Nia Jax returning and costing Raquel Rodriguez her chance, at least, to beat Rhea Ripley, and then attacking Rhea Ripley after the match. And giving her the bonsai, the old Yokozuna bonsai splash in the corner, fans booing her in the end. A lot of ripple effects from this. We saw Jade Cargill return on Saturday in AEW. We saw Nia Jax return tonight on Raw. A nice main event women's title match with an ending with more questions than answers in terms of how this affects all three. Are we headed to a triple threat, Nate? What do you think of having Nia come back and attack both the babyface and the heel, putting some sympathy on Rhea Ripley in the end?
I mean, I can't say that I'm super happy to see Nia Jax back in the WWE. I'll start with that. And, it's funny, too. Not that I really listen to, Vince Russo or anything like that, but I happened to see a quote, something about him talking about Nia Jax coming, he would end up booking Nia Jax for Rhea Ripley just like a week ago. And I started thinking about it, and I'm like, no, I don't want to see that. Now, here we are. It's okay kind of throwing somebody else in the mix here. I was really enjoying the match. And I was kind of hoping to see a definitive conclusion here. But obviously we didn't. We got Nia Jax coming in and kind of destroying everybody, as you said. I'm still kind of processing it and seeing where I think it may wind up going. A triple threat probably seems like the most, logical right out of the gate. But I guess it would all depend on where they kind of wind up going with this. It would be an interesting triple threat where both you'd have two heels, one babyface, which obviously you have in a triple threat, but one of them's one of the heels, the champion, challenger, and then face challenger. So they could make for at least some fun dynamics throughout the match. Nia Jax is back. Here we are.
So as a performer, I am more of a fan of Nia Jax than most people in this sphere. I think, there was some moves that hurt some people and some attitude issues. And I get where it came from. But I think as a performer, as an act, there's value in her. And it's super early in this. I think she's a big enough name. She's been gone long enough. WWE's looking to get people's attention during a time when a lot of people are watching Aaron Rodgers, at least for four plays, play for the New York Jets. And, it's a move to try to spark things. She has been available to WWE for a little while, but, they're waiting for the right moment to have her make her return. And this was a high-impact return. It would have been nice to have a clean finish. I know WWE well enough to know that isn't always going to happen at certain points in feuds. And I wasn't expecting Rodriguez to win the title tonight. It kind of goes against Judgment Day being belt collectors and the momentum there. I also wasn't expecting Rodriguez to lose clean, but I wasn't ruling it out. Dom could show up in a mask and interfere and then claim it wasn't him. I mean, there's, fun things that they can do in a pro wrestling way, maybe fun in quote marks, depending on how you feel about certain ways matches end and how WWE does some cop-out finishes. But, there are a variety of ways this could end. I did not predict Nia Jax costing Rodriguez the match, but then also attacking Rhea Ripley. The thing that I'm just not sure of is, and I'm critical of AEW for this sometimes, is right now you're supposed to be rooting against the Judgment Day. And their attempt to isolate and recruit Jey Uso, they're a heel faction in just about every way. I understand Ripley's popular, and but she's linked with a guy who fans love to boo. And now you've done an angle for Nia Jax's sake that interrupts the emotions that fans feel, which is wanting to see Ripley lose, not necessarily because they want to see Ripley lose, but they want to see Dom suffer for watching Rhea Ripley lose. So this confuses things a little bit. I guess if they're going to do Nia versus Ripley, I just would have rather had Nia Jax be a babyface, but she can't be because she cost Rodriguez the match. Or I'd rather have Nia Jax just be a heel, attack Rodriguez, not attack Ripley, and have a feud with Rodriguez, which I think would be perfectly fine as a way to transition Rodriguez away from Ripley. I'm just not crazy about the mixed emotions that I think fans were left with tonight, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, when you kind of put it like that, I hear you. It's like you said, Nia Jax. You know, I'll give her that. She's definitely got the name value, and I think there certainly is value there. I've never been a huge fan of her going back to the NXT days, but you know, it was really just more I didn't like the work. But
her body language, her facial expressions, her presence is top level.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And it's distinct, you know, she's not interchangeable with a lot of the, you know, typical body types and athletes that WWE pushes. So I just insert that in there. I don't want people to hold that against her.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I mean, she's certainly intimidating. I mean, and she can move, and she's certainly athletic and can, you know, move pretty quickly. So it's like, she'll have that presence in the ring. And I feel like she's certainly a threat against Rhea and Raquel for that matter. But I, you know, kind of thinking about it a little bit more, like if they did want to bring Nia Jax in, not that I would have wanted to see them take the title off of Rhea right now, especially with Judgment Day holding all the gold. But I mean, they could have done something like that. Raquel is champion, then bring Nia Jax in. I'm really curious to see how they wind up spinning this next week. And you know, what story they decide to tell here, because it, like you said, it does, it kind of leaves us with, I think, with some more questions than answers right now.
And I just think from a you have to be aware of, if you're WWE, of how people feel about Nia Jax too.
Yeah.
And if people have the reaction you had, Mauricio, in his Raw report on PW Torch, you know, he's like, I'm not a fan of her in the slightest, and I'm not interested in a program between her and Ripley or Raquel. I think a lot of people feel that way. And so when you're headed up against Monday Night Football, they might feel about Jax the way I do, which is, hey, she's got star power, presence, she's distinct. You know, some of the injuries early on and her attitude about them wasn't good, but it was part of her growth, and maybe she's, you know, in a different place now, a little more mature place, especially after some time away. I mean, you can, you know, make that case, but if that's WWE's belief, and I'm kind of saying what they might be saying to defend her, is that really a spark for fans, or are fans going to roll their eyes and not be interested in seeing more of her? So, you know, if this is a ratings, I don't say ploy, that sounds like it's some dishonest scheme, but if it is an attempt to spark interest in the show, it might be offset almost entirely by people just resenting having to see more of Nia Jax if that is the prevalent dominant attitude about her. And then, you know, we'll see. Like I said, I'm not against her coming back. I just don't like the angle at this point, but I always say this, I don't like fully judging something early on. You know, I want to give the writers and bookers and everyone a chance to tell their story a little deeper than this first week. But I'm guardedly negative about her being sort of not a lone wolf, but a indiscriminate attacker of everybody, because I think it just confuses the sharp lines that typically WWE has been drawing lately.
Guardedly negative. I like that. I like that.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's pause and formally introduce ourselves and then get on to other topics on the show from Raw tonight. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, September 11th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of a variety of podcasts, including tomorrow's Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast Flagship, a Tuesday Flagship with Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. Tomorrow, if you have a question or a topic or a rant for us to read on the flagship tomorrow in the mailbag portion, send those questions or comments in Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. It's all on the table for the flagship. We can talk WWE, AEW, and everything else. So you're encouraged to do that. You're also encouraged to participate in tonight's show if you're live streaming it and hearing us live right now after Raw. The phone number to participate is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. As I noted last week, we're up against Monday Night Football now, so it's going to take some non-football fans to help support the caller portion of the show, because there are going to be some people who are flipping back and forth and maybe don't see enough of Raw or any of Raw until later. So, consider yourself formally invited to be a first-time caller or a returning caller. If you are not an NFL fan, this is a call out to you to let us know what you think, not only of Raw, but of our conversation about Raw as the show progresses. That's 347-215-8558. All right, the email address I mentioned earlier also applies for tonight's show. So if you're live streaming us, you can email us right now, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. The other voice you've heard on the show so far is Nate Lindberg. He is a contributor to pwtorch.com with NXT Hits and Misses columns and the PWT Talks NXT podcast. Nate, welcome. Good to have you back in the co-host chair.
Yeah, thank you very much. Glad to be here. I was also I hung out with Greg Parks last night for Wrestling Night in America. So we had some technical difficulties at first, which left me alone for about 5 minutes. But then, which was fun. I killed some time. It was great. Yeah, but then we got into some NXT stuff and kind of previewed a little bit of No Mercy coming up at the end of the month. So yeah, check that out. But yeah, I'm also on PWT Talks NXT. We go live about 20 minutes or so. Whenever Bruce gets his stuff together, we'll jump on the air and basically same format. Take your calls, take your emails, and talk this latest episode of NXT.
All right. Very good. Good to have you on the show. Big show tomorrow with Becky Lynch, challenger of the women's title. So everybody check that out. Look for a link to the live stream in our NXT TV report at pwtorch.com on Tuesday night. And you can join the conversation or just download the show later on. Search PW Torch in your podcast app in order to hear the show live or download not only the PWT Talks NXT show, but all the shows on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Different show, different host, different theme every night of the week. All right, let's speaking of callers, let's go to our VIP member, Chris from Oklahoma, who is in the queue. Chris, welcome. Good to talk to you. What would you like to talk about tonight regarding Raw?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Nate. How are y'all doing?
Good, good. Thanks.
Well.
Good, good. Okay, so a few things stood out for me, and I totally agree with you, Wade, when it comes to Rhea Ripley. The fans want to cheer her so much, and it seems like the only way they can get her to be a heel is when she's with Dom. So now that they kind of took that away tonight a little bit, they really didn't know how to, you know, act whenever all of a sudden you have Nia Jax comes back and attacks Raquel, and okay, that's a heel move. Well, then she attacks Rhea, and you think, okay, automatically it'd be, cheers or something like that if she was a natural heel, but the fans are just not into her. Then beforehand, whenever I saw Dom walk out, I was listening a little bit. It seemed like those boos were not all natural boos. It seemed like they were a little bit popped in. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I'm just curious what you thought about that and the dynamic that's starting to happen. That
early on, there were accusations of that. We've had on-site correspondents say no, boos are just that loud. I have no reason to rule out they pipe in boos, but I also wouldn't bet that they are at this moment. I think that they that he's getting booed a lot right now and everywhere he goes. And so, you know, I don't know if they're enhancing it. I don't think they need to. I don't think there'd be equity in exaggerating through piping them in. It would just take away some of the specialness of the organicness of the whole thing. So anyway, yeah. But I'd just be speculating. And either way, he's getting booed loudly. everywhere he goes. And man, did he get drowned out tonight. And it's really fun to watch. Sorry, Chris. I focused on that. What else? Did you have anything else you wanted to comment on?
Well, the other thing, yeah, a couple of things. I thought tonight was Chad Gable's best night on the mic yet. I really love that segment, him and Gunther. I mean, that looked to me like he was more confident. He wasn't using catchphrases. He only used it one time coming out, but then he got serious. And that's the type of Chad Gable that I really hope that they stick with. And I'm just wondering your thoughts about that.
Yeah, so 2 weeks ago he was doing the shush and, you know, his little catchphrase stuff and more mid-card comedy, and I was critical of it and a lot of other people were. The last 2 weeks he's dropped it because he's fighting Gunther. He should rise to the occasion and treat the situation more seriously, and it looks like he is. I thought it was good. I don't think he's, like, a great promo, but I thought I was thinking, Chris, what you were thinking, which is, this might be his best promo, at least in the context of being at a more serious level and not doing mid-card comedy. Nate, what have you thought of Gable's character over time and the adjustment the last couple of weeks and tonight in particular?
So I just want to throw this in there about Dominic Mysterio. When he's been showing, because obviously he's the North American champion down in NXT, you can definitely see the booze coming out of the faces of the people in the audience in NXT, where it's such an intimate and small crowd. So, I don't think they're necessarily piping them in either. I think that's all organic, and God, how special that is. Chad Gable, man, it's such a shame Jason Jordan got hurt and Chad Gable, and he couldn't kind of like reunite and reform Alpha Academy and, or maybe even do something with Otis. But cause man, I loved that tag team. Everything that he's been doing lately with Otis, I think it's been fine. Like the whole shoosh thing. I mean, I get it. I understand why people like it. I personally just find it very annoying. But I get it. I understand why people like it. I really do like the fact that he's kind of dropped that the last 2 weeks. He's, you know, like you said, he's going up against Gunther. This was like the biggest match of his career. And what a match that was, by the way. It was a fantastic, fantastic way to end Raw last week. I think this is probably some of the best work he's done in his career, which is kind of funny considering he's kind of been a tag wrestler this whole time. So it's cool to see him be able to like break free from that and kind of show some singles acumen. But where he is better, you know, has been doing those cutting better promos and kind of more from the heart, I guess, not necessarily hitting all of those catchphrases and whatnot. It's certainly better. He's not the greatest promo in the world by a long shot, but it's much more believable, especially where he starts tapping into the fact that, you know, his family was sitting ringside, his daughter was crying. You know, it was kind of like I was talking but actually, Kelly Wells and I filled in for Wade on SmackDown's post-show 2 weeks ago, and we were talking about Shinsuke and Seth Rollins, and that whole angle with their for the World Heavyweight title. And like Seth Rollins, kind of same thing. He's talking like a father and a husband. And it was the same thing with Chad Gable here. He's kind of channeling that husband and father, you know, pride and protection. So I dug it. I think it worked for him. I don't know. I hate to say it because I like the guy, but you know, it's probably the ceiling for him. I don't know how much higher he goes from here, other than potentially winning the IC title at some point. But I don't think it's going to be much, much higher than that. But other than that, love the guy. And I look forward to seeing him in the ring every time.
Yeah, I would not rule out that this isn't the peak of his singles career and the peak of him being a serious wrestler just because of his, you know, kind of demeanor, his personality. It is, even when he's trying to be serious, I don't think it's top-level main event promo work. I don't see him becoming Kurt Angle or Bryan yeah. Danielson or AJ Styles, but that's, I mean, there's degrees of certainty, and I am not certain that he won't. But my inclination is he probably raises his how people feel about him through this. But then he goes back to take matches with Otis and kind of ends up in a similar position. That's kind of what I think the trajectory is. And I have no problem with somebody who's a mid-card but mega-talented tag team wrestler, comedy figure, rising for a moment. And who was the old the New York Knick point guard who had like a couple years, like a decade ago, where he was like famous and he was doing way better than anyone expected, and then he just sort of went back into obscurity? Nate, are you an NBA fan enough to remember?
You were talking about people that aren't sports fans earlier. Hi, that's me.
Yeah. I think that even rose beyond to like the mainstream. But anyway, people are yelling at me right now. I haven't thought of this. But you know, every once in a while, just there's kind of a fun story. But it doesn't have to be long term to be fun. Somebody can email me if they're listening live and go and tell me who I'm thinking of, because it'll then be like, oh, of course, yeah. Anyway, so whatever, you know, I mean, but enjoy it while it lasts, because my God, he's been a great opponent for Gunther. And Gunther, by the way, I want to compliment Gunther on his demeanor. I thought the announcers did a great job talking about, I think it was Barrett who said, you know, Gunther thinks celebrating and basking in, well, he didn't say basking in glory, that's a Keith Lee thing, but it's something that Gunther looks down on. But tonight, you know, he has accomplished something that isn't for lazy people or self-congratulatory and disciplined people. You know, he's the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion ever, and he is going to celebrate that. And I thought it was interesting seeing Gunther in a different mode, you know, a genuinely celebrating mode with a smile on his face and a swagger that's different than what we usually see from him. You know, kind of let his guard down a little bit, dressed up, you know, got out of a Mercedes limousine and really soaked up the moment. I think they've done a great job with Gunther, and, you know, Gunther will go back to being more serious, obviously, going forward. And he actually, you know, certainly was even in the tag match. There's just a number of things that were really fun on Raw tonight. And that tag match was a lot of fun too. Good moments that they built up to between Gable and Gunther in the end, but a lot of other good stuff leading up to it. Kaiser just continues to be so impressive in the ring. Kaiser and Vinci has been doing really well too. You know, he's been a little more hit or miss work wise in the ring. Never bad, but just not, you know, at the Kaiser and Gunther level, but he's been, I think, rising to the occasion too. So anyway, lots of fun stuff there. I'll throw it back to Chris for any follow-up or change of topic.
One more topic and then I'll let you go. With the Self Endeavor, do you think that one of the first things that will end up happening, do you think Riddle will be released in the coming days?
I wouldn't rule it out, but we don't know enough. But it sounds like there's quite a bit to know, and quite a bit in terms of probably eyewitnesses to at least Riddle's conduct on the plane ride back from India. We've got the story up at pwtorch.com. It, you know, the whole thing gained traction on TMZ. I think it was Ringside News that initially broke the story. Actually, Riddle broke the story because he went on Instagram and ranted about how he was sexually assaulted by airport police. And
talk about incriminating himself.
Everyone else's account.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. And then took the Instagram post down, and the police are like, well, this isn't really what is in the report. And so, yeah, I mean, WWE can't be hasty about it. They've got to do their due diligence. But this could be strike three for Riddle. You know, I mean, it could. I mean, he's, you know, not not a model employee, but he just is, if you're management, he's unpredictable in ways. Yeah, doesn't make things easy. He's a headache. He can be a headache sometimes, I guess, maybe is the way to put it. So obviously he's real talented, but there's a reason he has been, you know, losing and, you know, being designated to lose matches and that kind of thing. I mean, management knows they can't build around him more than, you know, a sidekick in a tag team at this point, and, you know, good for a singles match here and there. So I don't think it'd be this big loss to the company. It's just kind of a loss to Drew McIntyre in terms of the story they're telling with him and Riddle, I guess.
Okay, thanks, guys, and I'll keep listening to the show. I appreciate it.
Great, thanks, Chris. Yeah, appreciate it. Nate, what do you think about Riddle overall and the Riddle situation this week coming out of this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, like, I like Riddle. I like his body of work, and, I mean, you're going back to NXT, his match against Oh my God, why can't I think of it? Now it's happening to me. I can't think of his name. In the fight pit, he had a fight pit match against a guy with his first name was a T. I'll think of it at some point. But you know, great, like
Jeremy Lin. Jeremy Lin. It just came to me. I'm trying to think. I'm not you.
Oh, okay. All right. I was thinking you said Jerry Lynn. I was like, that would have been a weird match, but all right.
No.
Okay. No. But no, so, you know, I'm definitely a fan of, you know, of his body of work and all of that. But yeah, you know, he's had some issues outside the ring. He's not super mature from what it kind of seems like here.
He is not super mature. That is a safe high bar that he is not going to reach. The question is he moderately mature or slightly mature?
And so yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's kind of it. And so we talked a little bit about this last night in Wrestling Night in America, and you know, I actually didn't hear about it until Wrestling Night in America. I saw some headline that something was going on Riddle, but I hadn't quite got the full story. And you know, I'm kind of the camp of, like, you know, from everything that we've kind of come out so far, I mean, it kind of just seems like he's making mountain out of molehill and was drunk and whatever, but is what it is. I would not rule the WWE out from, you know, from getting rid of him. You know, like you said, strike three, there is value there with him, but I mean, it's not like he's a Drew McIntyre or, you know, a Seth Rollins or, you know, Roman Reigns. It's, you know, I don't think the roster would be hurting that much if he was to be gone. Like you said, the current story with Drew would kind of, you know, take a hit. But other than that, you know, I don't think it would be a huge loss. You know, I hate saying that, but, you know, kind of think that's where it's being.
Yeah, I mean, he's not Riddle to WWE is not CM Punk to AEW. You know, I mean, it's
not at all.
They've got pieces they can put in his place and keep on marching. All right. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad so that we know you want to be on the show. That'll flag you on our switchboard. And again, we're making a call out to non-NFL fans, people who are not watching Monday Night. Well, maybe you're an NFL fan and just not watching Monday Night Football. But whatever it is, give us a call. We'd love to hear from some first-time callers tonight and in upcoming weeks as we move into the fall season. And WWE tries to hold as many viewers' attention as they can as the NFL season rolls on. All right, let's go to Brad from Florida up next. Brad, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, Wade and Nate, always great to hear your voice, man. I'm an enormous sports fan. I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm a huge football fan. I love basketball. I mean, I love everything, but I chose to watch Raw tonight. I'm also a New Yorker who didn't really watch the Jets game, and I kind of kept up on it a little bit on my phone and whatever, and you know. But ultimately, I decided to watch Raw. I will continue to watch Raw because it does bring me a lot of enjoyment, more so than a football game for whatever reason. I don't really know why, but it does it for me a little bit more in certain ways. And there's plenty of football to watch during wrestling.
Yeah. No reason to apologize. There's a lot of NFL, and you know, not every Monday Night Football game is going to win over WWE, even a regular episode of Raw.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, for me, that's just what it is. But you noticed, you know, they didn't have the, you know, number one on Twitter. You know, they didn't have that, you know, trending number one in the United States because obviously it was football. So you know, that was interesting to see. If you saw it for, you know, what, 30 weeks, you know, you saw the, you know, every Raw number one. But tonight's episode was terrific, in my opinion. I thought the crowd was amazing. The crowd was super energetic, super lively from the very beginning. You could just tell with all the signs and the insane hand waving for Jay at the beginning. I mean, Norfolk,
yes.
Virginia, they were awesome. I mean, honestly, they were incredible. And I'd love to, you know, I hope someone calls in as on site. I don't know if you have an on site tonight. But they were just fantastic. I mean, better than, you know, better than I think Boston the other night, you know, better than a lot of big cities are. And I was really, I thought that really set the tone for what I thought was a really well-written and sensical, like it made a lot of sense this episode. Like there was a lot of things that tied together. You know, one of the things I was thinking about when Nia Jax came back that I wanted your opinion on, isn't she somehow related to Roman Reigns in some way? Isn't there some Rock connection with her or something, or am I wrong?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Nate.
Oh yeah, no, I was going to say yeah. There definitely is. You know, she's it's a loose like cousin relation, and I can't remember the exact like familial connection, but yeah, there's definitely a connection between her and the Anoa'i family.
So what I was wondering is, and I don't know if you guys even thought of this or if I'm the only one or if I'm crazy, but are we setting up a Judgment Day versus Bloodline Survivor Series War Games type of match with, and I think the reason that Nia Jax attacked Raquel and then Ripley is to show, like, I'm a heel. I'm certainly not someone good that you can admire. But, in the end, I'm going to attack Rhea too because, I'm attacking everyone in my way. Almost, do you think they're setting up like a, Finn Balor, Damian Priest, Dominic, Rhea versus Roman, Solo, Jimmy, and Nia Jax. I mean, could that be a route that they're going with this return? Or I know that's only 4-4. I don't know who the fifth would be for the Bloodline. Obviously, the fifth for Judgment Day would be JD McDonagh. I don't know who a fifth would be.
So you're saying Nia Jax or Rhea are in the Judgment Day against the Bloodline?
No, I'm saying, yeah, Rhea is the Judgment Day woman, and Nia Jax is the Bloodline woman.
Gotcha. Yeah, I just wanted clarity on that. It's intriguing. I mean, it would explain her actions if they were to connect her to the Bloodline. She's Rock's second cousin, by the way, just in terms of the family tree. And yeah, I mean, I honestly hadn't thought about that. I've thought a lot about the idea that they continue to drop hints of a Bloodline Judgment Day feud and, recruiting. I mean, they're putting the hard press on Jay. Jay has shown himself to be susceptible as a follower to join bad situations. The fans are really into him. It's dangerous to have him. Because of how popular it is with fans, it's a bit dangerous to go that route. But if they've got a big master plan that they think works with the intrigue, the intrigue of Jay and Judgment Day, and maybe Jay doesn't join, but he agrees to team with them against the Bloodline with Jimmy on the other side. I mean, I think there'd be a lot of interest in it. And I can't say that anything is pointing completely away from that. And it would, mean Nia Jax would be a heel. For sure. But it would set up Judgment Day to be the baby faces, even if they are kind of connivers and obviously, portrayed as heels otherwise. It'd be a little muddy, Nate, if you put Judgment Day and Bloodline together with both being heel factions and fans would sort of be forced to choose and then are they rooting for Jay to coexist well with the Judgment Day? They'd be cheering for Rhea, but booing Dom because they don't like Nia Jax. It'd be a bit of a cluster mess. Nate, what do you think of that?
I don't disagree that it would be a bit of a mess, but I think, again, it depends on the story they tell, but it's the direction that I've kind of been wondering myself. I didn't necessarily think about leading up to like a War Games or Survivor Series type of a match, but it looked to me like that, that's potentially where they were going, Bloodline versus Judgment Day at some point. with Judgment Day trying to recruit Jey Uso, which might wind up getting under the skin of Roman Reigns or something like that. It feels like there's that natural story there. I say natural story mostly because there's two factions with four people in them. So it's like, why not? Kind of makes sense. Like you said, it could get a little bit confusing, especially where they're both heel teams. You could kind of swing Judgment Day face in this case, and I think that would probably be the way you'd have to go. Bloodline would have to be the heels. But Judgment Day, I mean, they're almost at that cusp right now, with the exception of Dom, obviously. But they're at that, you know, at that cusp where they're so popular as a heel act that it really wouldn't be that hard to flip them. But I just don't know what that would necessarily do for them unless they, you know, kind of like you said, they stayed that kind of like conniving type babyface. Otherwise, I feel like it would almost kill a gimmick. So I'm not completely against it, but they'd have to tell a really good story to kind of tie all the pieces together in order to get to like a compelling War Games match.
I think they planted enough seeds where it's subtle, not inevitable, not obvious, but
yeah,
part of a master plan that, again, will take some patience to watch play out. I'm intrigued. I just sort of have a – not that I've loved every twist and turn in the Bloodline, and they've, you know, had some circumstances where, you know, it seems like, well, we're trying to stretch this out and get more out of it and accommodate Roman's schedule. And it's not perfect, but – there's still part of me that, like, trust that if they have that in mind, they've thought it through week to week to week to get to wherever they want to go. And I just think it's a credit to Judgment Day and WWE's booking team that Judgment Day are in the conversation in a way where I think no one's going, well, Judgment Day's not – Bloodline's too big of a – are too big to mess – to waste time with Judgment Day. Like, I think people see Judgment Day now as a legit – counteract to the Bloodline. In fact, you know, having them win so many titles and walk out as basically belt collectors and having bragging rights and each character being so distinct and the new X Factor and Agitator and JD McDonagh, it has become really interesting. And they have been helping carry these 3-hour Raws for, a month or two now. They've just really risen. So I if they've got a good story in mind, I'm on board to watch it play out. I'm nervous about both teams being heels and what it does to interrupt both factions' momentum. But again, they probably have thought of that. They might think no big deal, or they might think we're going to fix that with how we steer fans in terms of cheering one team and booing the other. Brad, back to you. Do you want to follow up on that or add anything else?
Yeah, no, it's just, I mean, even Damian Priest on SmackDown, he said, we even did something that Roman Reigns couldn't do. And Dominic brought them up at the Bloodline, and Rhea's brought them up a few times, and it seems like a natural battle for supremacy. We run Raw, we run SmackDown, like a perfect setting for Survivor Series. Now, I don't know how an intergender match in a War Games setting would ever work. I don't know if you just have Nia Jax going after Rhea Ripley, and that is what it is, but I do think the recruitment of Jay,
I don't think they can put women in the. I don't think they can put women in a formal War Games match with a double cage and a rope. I feel like that's, not. I think that's something WWE would steer away from. I think they would split off Ripley and Jax probably, or do a mixed tag, but not War Games. There's various other possibilities in that. Anyway, Brad, sorry for interjecting there.
No, it's fine. It's it's just, I don't know, even if it was I guess you could do a 3-on-3 type of thing, 4-on-4 if you want to include JD McDonagh. I don't know who the fourth would be for the Bloodline, because obviously we only have Jimmy, Solo, Roman now. But the recruitment of Jay by them does make it very interesting. Like, you're trying to bring one of our people over. Yeah, we kicked him out, but that doesn't mean you get to have him. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like if you hire an employee, but you still don't want your biggest competitor to hire them. You know what I mean? So, regardless, the Tiffany Stratton thing, I mean, there was like 7-8 commercials. Obviously, there was that segment right before the main event with Becky and Tiffany. I am so excited for this. I think Tiffany came across really well tonight, like really poised. She didn't fumble her words. She didn't come across as nervous. She came across as confident. You know, this is for someone with very little experience. And I thought she came across like a real star tonight, standing backstage with Becky. Nate, I want your opinion on this, and just because I know this is really your sweet spot here. I personally do not think the title is changing hands tomorrow night. I really don't. I think Tiffany's going to keep it. I don't think she's going to pin Becky 1-2-3. I just don't know, the disqualification or a weird, wonky ending. But I do want your guys' thoughts on that, because it was a big emphasis throughout the night, whether it was advertisements or, you know, what we saw before the main event. So I want your opinion on, you know, maybe what we might see tomorrow night. And if Becky does win that championship, like, you know, are we just going to have every main roster person just win a NXT title?
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah. I mean, so really there's like, I guess, three ways to get out of this. Becky wins. There's some sort of a DQ and Tiffany retains, or somebody comes in and helps Tiffany retain. I can't see Tiffany winning clean. I would be shocked almost if she won clean here, especially over, you know, main roster star like Becky, unless that was the story they were telling and they were going to wind up, you know, bringing that onto the main roster or something. I'm very torn, because there's a big part of me that has always wanted to see Becky Lynch get the NXT title. It was like, you know, she was one of the four horsewomen that never got it. And it was kind of just like, you know, it would have been nice to see that happen. So there's like just kind of like that nostalgia factor for me, is, I guess, much as you can talk about NXT and nostalgia. But, you know, that would be awesome to see Becky Lynch get the title. But I don't think it would do any favors for Stratton, unless there was some sort of a story to bring her up to the main roster. I don't think it would do any favors for Stratton right now. I mean, her title reign is still pretty – I say it's infant. She won it back in April. So, I mean, she's had it for about 4 months now. So, I mean, it's – but she's still – she's been a pretty – you know, a decent champion. She's obviously, you know, won all of her matches so far. I'm leaning towards Tiffany retaining, but there could also be like, I'm like 70% her retaining, 30% Becky actually winning the title that she never quite captured. So that is a story they keep telling. They kind of keep coming back to that. So it's like, I don't know if that's like foreshadowing or a red herring. Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Nate, what's your scouting report on Tiffany's upside on the main roster when she gets called up? What is she? Where's her weakness? What's her likely landing place in the hierarchy of the main roster women whenever that day comes?
So I think it's going to be pretty high up. She's. My biggest thing with her has been her backstage work, you know, the vignettes, promo work and things like that. Tonight, I think she did a fantastic job. I think it's probably one of the better nights she's had. She's had some really good nights the past, you know, I'd say maybe month and a half, you know, where I really haven't questioned her promo ability or anything like that. The biggest thing that I was questioning was when she actually called Becky Lynch out as a former NXT Women's Champion, but I didn't realize that she was planting a seed for this, you know, back then. So I kind of criticized her for that, but it was actually all storyline and all, you know, there in the first place. But her in-ring work is fantastic. You know, she came into NXT and, you know, she was still a little bit green, but you could tell she had something. There was something there. She had that it factor. And it's definitely grown over the past, year or so that she's actually a little more than that. It's NXT 2.0, the debut of NXT 2.0, which is a little over a year ago now, year and a half ago. You know, that she made her debut and kind of made her splash on NXT. And, it, you know, she had some work to do in the ring. She's done it. And, her finishing move is spectacular. So I think they're going to probably try and position her as a upper mid-card to main event level, especially where she's, you know, already feuding with somebody like Becky Lynch. You know, hopefully that's kind of where she lands. And I think she'd be able to pull it off. They may wind up bringing her in maybe like a little bit lower than that, have her work up. But I think if they were to bring her in, you know, upper mid card to main event level, she'd definitely be able to pull it off.
All right, Brad, back to you.
Yeah, I agree. Main event level. I totally agree, Nate. She's amazing.
Yeah.
Two quick other things and I'll let you go. Chad Gable, you know, saying to Gunther in the ring, "I swear to God that I'm going to take that title
from
you. I swear to God. You know, I mean, normally when things like that are said, they happen. I mean,
guarantee.
I just don't think he would have said that if he didn't know, you know, what's coming. I really think Chad Gable is going to be the person to dethrone Gunther. And do you guys feel that way after hearing his words tonight?
I don't. And I'm even wondering if he was supposed to say those exact words or he just got carried away. I don't think Chad should be the one to beat Gunther. But if he does, that is a sign that management thinks they can get a lot more out of Chad Gable than at this point even I'm thinking. And I've been an advocate, you know, for Gable getting a singles push. But that would be a sign that – I mean, because whoever beats Gunther is going to be – you know, have a chance to be made by that. That'll be a moment that will help define their career. And to give that win to Gable is would be a really interesting choice. And in theory – a vote of confidence that they can turn Gable into a consistent, you know, kind of semi-main event guy. Otherwise, you'd want to save that for someone else. Nate, what do you think? What do you think of Gable winning, the pros and cons? And is there someone else who comes to mind where you're like, no, save it for that? Part of the calculation is they want Gunther eventually to not be IC champion so that he can be in the world title picture. And is Gable someone for Gunther to safely lose to, because it you know, the circumstances could be Gunther taking Gable lightly and people would not look at that as defining Gunther down. Whereas if he loses to another sort of main event wrestler, it might define him down a little bit. So in the way WWE, you know, looks at the psychology of their booking of finishes, they might actually think Gable winning is a safer choice because in a sense, he's not a threat to define down Gunther the way that they would book the match. Nate, over to you for any of that.
Yeah. So Chad Gable, like, you know, like I said earlier, I love watching him wrestle. I'm a big fan, you know, I definitely like to see the fact that, you know, he's getting a singles push here. It just something about the phrase Chad Gable defeats Gunther for the Intercontinental title. It's in that streak. It just doesn't feel right. Where he does seem like such a comedic character with the whole shoosh thing and just everything he's been doing, you know, I mean, really past handful of years now, you know, with Otis and everything. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like the right time, like the right person. I don't know who that is, but I've been scrolling up and down the roster here. And like, there's a couple people that kind of stick out, you know, like Bronson Reed is somebody that I feel like, you know, if they wanted to get behind him, they wanted to push him, he's big enough and he's got that, he's menacing enough, I guess I should say, that it could kind of make sense to maybe dethrone, you know, Gunther. You know, there's same thing with Odyssey Jones, but I don't know if he's necessarily where they want him to be yet for something like that. Odyssey Jones, I wouldn't even put down, you know, quite some time down the road. The other person that kind of comes to mind, and this is a stretch, but if you want to make the Intercontinental title mean something, which it already does with what Gunther did here, but you want to continue that and you really want to make it mean something, have Cody beat him. And you have Cody beat him, and you know, he gets that accolade under his belt. He didn't quite dethrone Roman, but he kind of dethroned the next best thing. And then he can carry that IC title around for a little while, whether or not, you know, we have a heel world champion or face world champion at the time. I guess it really doesn't matter. But he carries the IC title around, and just his name alone adds the gravitas. But then he also, you know, kind of this big marquee match between he and Gunther for that title. I think that would be a cool way to go for me.
From NXT, if I would say somebody from NXT is penciled in to beat Gunther, who jumps out as a candidate?
Ooh, that's a good one. Give me like a minute. I'll get back to you.
Yeah. I mean, if they wanted Braun Breaker to be a babyface, that, you know, they could do that. I don't know if that's the best role for him. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, yeah, it's funny. As you were saying, I was going to bring up my three people that I would have do it, and it wouldn't be Gable, but you know, just based on Gable's words tonight, I kind of think it might happen. You know, the swear to God thing, my family, you know, whatever. I would have, you know, certainly Carmelo Hayes, certainly a baby face Austin Theory. And I'm talking about this might be, you know, 7 months from now after a draft or something where they're on the same brand. I would have a baby face Austin Theory do it. I think that would be incredible for him. And the third person would be Ilya Dragunov. That would be that. Those would be. I mean, you know, maybe a babyface Braun Breaker, but I'm sure you agree with those, Nate.
You just sold me on Ilya Dragunov. You just sold me on that. I would.
And then Gunther moves on to world title, and then we get Ludwig versus Ilya. And there you go.
I'd be down with that too.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Because I feel like it's the type of thing, like, that's the type of title, if you want to give someone a rocket strap to their back, like, if you're going to call up Carmelo Hayes, how do you make it matter? You have him win that. And he made the North American Championship in NXT feel so valuable and so, bigger than the NXT Championship. And, you know, whatever. My very last thing is Wade Barrett. He is really masterful, and I think the reason why Raw is just feeling and seeming better and better to me every week, I just felt like, wow, like Raw feels like the A show. Like, I was very disappointed by SmackDown on Friday, and Raw, for the last 2 weeks especially, has felt great to me. And I think it's Wade Barrett. I think it's the Wade Barrett-Michael Cole combination that just really, really works. And it's no offense to Patrick. Kevin Patrick, I want the best for him. I want him to be successful, and I want him to have a wonderful life of great things. I just don't love his energy. I don't know what it is. His mic always sounds a little low. It doesn't come across with authority. Wade Barrett tonight especially was so funny and so masterful, and his timing is perfect. And just everything about the way him and Cole interact is so perfect. And it really makes Raw a better show. It makes Raw a better show than it was 5-6 weeks ago when it was Patrick Graves and just Patrick and Graves, yeah. It just makes it a much better show. And Wade had, you know, so many lines. I agree, Cole. He is a bad father, you know, like whatever. Just the things he was saying, like, he was so good. And that's just my one comment on how much he adds to the broadcast, but – yeah, I'd love to hear you guys continue on about that Intercontinental Championship thing if you feel like it and you have some time. But thank you, fellas. Nate, I'll probably speak to you tomorrow night on that NXT show if you're doing it, because I'm really excited for this Becky match. And Wade, thanks as always for the time, and great to speak with you guys.
Brad, thanks. Good contributions. Yeah, call tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks,
Brad. Nate, I want you to comment on the announcing and broaden it out too, because I want to get your thoughts on how you think the NXT team is doing too.
Yeah, so I was really upset when Wade Barrett got drafted to Raw. I'm not going to lie, I love Wade Barrett's commentary. He added so much to NXT. You know, one of my favorite commentators in NXT was Mauro. You know, he's long gone with the company now and all of that, but I absolutely love Mauro in NXT, and we had some good announcers and stuff. Like, you know, I thought Beth Phoenix, you know, she eventually came into her own down there, and I actually really liked what she was doing in NXT when she was commentating down there. But Wade Barrett, as Brad was just saying, he really adds a lot of flavor to any match, to any angle. Like, he's not only is he just a brilliant wrestling mind. I mean, he's just a very intelligent guy. You listen to like any backstage or not backstage interview, but you know, behind the scenes interview, you know, like on YouTube or whatever, very eloquent, very well spoken. So I feel like he's a perfect choice for color commentary. You know, I agree, you know, him on Raw, especially with Michael Cole, they play very well off of each other. You know, Michael, he gets a lot of flack for, you know, being Michael Cole and saying some of the things he said over the years. But, you know, I mean, he's he's, you know, undoubtedly one of, you know, one of the better commentators that they've had in, you know, in WWE history, really. You know, and now that he's not quite constrained by Vince, I feel like he's really kind of come out of his own, and you know, he's actually doing a really good job. So yeah, I definitely like the, you know, the commentary team here on NXT, here on Raw. On NXT, when we lost Wade Barrett, we got Booker T. Now, I love Booker T. I love Booker T's body of work. I loved him as a five-time WCW champion. I loved King Booker. I loved Booker and Goldust. I really loved Booker and Goldust. But commentary is not my favorite thing for Booker T to be doing. You know, part of it is I do, you know, I went to a rock concert years ago and have a little bit of hearing loss from that. And his tone of voice on the show, I have a really hard time hearing. So I don't know if that's part of it for me. But sometimes I just like, I can hear him, but I can just, it almost sounds like he's mumbling. It's like I can hear Vic Joseph all the time. So it's like, I'm kind of trying to figure out what Booker's saying. But then when I hear what Booker's saying, he's just coming out with like shucky ducky quack quack, or, you know, there's even been times where he's called, and I can't think of a specific offhand, but where he's called something out that like is just blatantly wrong, and then Vic Joseph immediately just, you know, corrects him right on air. So it's not bad. Like for what I'm saying, you know, it sounds like Booker T is like the worst commentator ever or whatever. You know, he's not terrible, but he's not
no,
really
he's
my
terrible. He's terrible.
Okay. All right.
I will vote for terrible.
Right.
I think I have been a fierce critic of his commentary every time he's had the national stage in any format. I think he says things that are totally counterproductive, that are eye roll inducing, that are I like just shake my head at. I'm just I am dumbfounded regularly, and I just find his inflections just to be sort of on autopilot sometimes too, in a way that is honestly, I think, trying to phrase it in a nicer way than I'm thinking, but counterproductive to the goals of what in the efforts of what the wrestlers are doing in the ring and what the writers have done. But you know, they like his gregarious, affable personality, and they keep finding places for him.
Yeah. No. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So, good stuff there. Thanks, Brad, for the call. Thanks, Nate, for that analysis. Kevin Owens and Jey Uso at the top of the show interacted, and I want to for sure get this in on the show. Kevin Owens acknowledged that he shares some of the same issues that Jey does because of his past. We had later in the show Seth kind of doing that too, not related to Jey, but talking about how, you know, his journey and why he did some of the things that he did. I'm glad that WWE is acknowledging, owning, and incorporating into the journey that wrestlers are on, their past, and not just pretending when someone goes from heel to face that they just never were heel and they didn't do all these awful things. That's kind of the way pro wrestling works. It's sort of lazy. Sometimes it's just, you know, I think bookers think it's necessary. We got to pretend Hulk Hogan didn't do that to Elizabeth in the trailer so that fans will cheer him again as he goes after the next villain and cheer him as Mr. America or whatever. I mean, it's just like, you know, in some ways it's a necessity to move forward. But I think this is being done really artfully, that they are that KO is going, yeah, I get the position you're in. I've been there. I've done some terrible things, and I had to atone for them, and you are too. And I think Cole on commentary, speaking of commentators, has done a really good job pointing out when something is obviously an inadvertent accident and not like playing dumb or condescending the audience in a way where you're like, wait, does Michael Cole think I'm stupid? Of course it was an accident. That wasn't intentional. So I thought that was really well done. By having one, I just like the Jey storyline that, you know, they moved him to Raw, but it's like, hey, he's got a whole history with a lot of these people. And then you got Kevin Owens added to the mix and, you know, kind of unlikely tag partners without Sammy there. The disagreement at the end, which you can understand, KO not trusting him. You can imagine, you can understand Finn Balor going, I see what you did there, because Balor's mind would work that way. But I think most fans right now are thinking, of course it was inadvertent. Maybe they're thinking, could Jey have pulled back a little bit? Maybe, but I don't think people think Jey has an incentive to go after Owens, and I think they genuinely don't think Jey has decided to join Judgment Day either. I think they think, what you see on his face is what the truth is, that he's reluctant to side with them, but his history is that of being a follower, somebody who wants to join other people and not be on his own. And so fans have hoped for him to break out. They're hoping for him to be his own man now. If he doesn't, I think there's potential damage to his potential singles babyface run, but there might be, you know, a juicy storyline as sort of a transition or a bridge to get there. Nate, what do you think about the Jay storyline so far, in particular the KO interaction tonight?
So far, I love what they're doing with him on Raw. Like, he's both he and Jimmy, for that matter, they've kind of been able to break out as their own unique talents. It's been, you know, I mean, for years I had trouble telling them apart. I mean, I think a lot of people did, and now they've got, you know, very distinct personalities. And they've just kind of, like, you know, we just talk about journeys, very, you know, separate and just, well, not quite separate, but very distinct journeys. And now this is just kind of the next step for Jay here. I think it's a big vote of confidence for him to be able to, step up into this kind of a role after being, you know, I mean, really in a tag team pretty much his entire career. And now kind of like command a crowd. You know, he comes out tonight before Kevin Owens. He's talking with the crowd. The crowd's like, you know, I mean, granted, it's kicking off the show, so of course the crowd's going to be hot, but, you know, they're happy to see him. They're cheering him. They're chanting Uso. So it's like the crowd's there for it, which is great. I like the story of, like, you know, Cody Rhodes bringing him in, and now, you know, he has, like, two friends, Sami Zayn and Cody Rhodes, and everybody else is kind of like, what are you doing here? A little skeptical and everything. It's kind of cool because now it puts a little bit of pressure on Cody. Cody especially, not Sammy, not so much, but mostly Cody for bringing him in. And, like, if something does happen and, you know, Jay does join this, you know, Judgment Day, or you start causing mass chaos or whatever on Raw, that kind of falls on Cody. So there could certainly be some story involvement there. I'm almost guaranteed there'll be some story involvement there at some point, bringing Cody in and because of his decision and willingness to bring Jay in. So far I've dug it. It's been great. I was trying to remember what the second thing was that you asked. It was about Kevin Owens. The interaction with Kevin Owens, I thought they did a great job with this as well. Kevin, you know, like you said, he's kind of been in that same boat, you know, where people don't quite trust him and his motives. I mean, geez, it goes all the way back to his, like, you know, debut run in NXT when, you know, Sami Zayn, his best friend, wins the NXT title. He comes out to celebrate and then just annihilates Sami right during that win. So Kevin's always kind of been like, you know, that snake, if you will. So of course Kevin's going to point that out and, you know, hone in on that. And, you know, I think what you said is accurate. You know, what we see with Jay is kind of what we're getting right now. Or at least it's what the fans are kind of believing. It's what I'm believing. It's what, what's on his face is actually his motives. And, you know, he doesn't, like you said, he doesn't really seem to have an incentive to try and screw anybody over just yet. So it does kind of seem like, you know, it was an accident. Didn't quite mean to kick him in the face. I do wish that they would get away from this whole, anytime they put just two random faces together in a tag team, you got one, there's a little miscommunication and one hits the other. And then now that starts some sort of a feud. Look, we see that all the time. We've seen it at least once in the last month down in NXT with Ilya Dragunov and Carmelo Hayes. So, I wish they'd maybe be a little bit more creative there, but otherwise, I'm looking forward to what they're doing with this and how well Jay can actually hold himself in a main event slot, which I think he's going to kill it. So looking forward to see what they do here.
Okay. I want to go to JB in Detroit, who brings up Jay. So I kind of wanted to get that foundation in from earlier in the show. He brings up a couple of other points here. One, I noticed this week that Jay didn't come out through the crowd for his entrance. Do you think that this was a conscious decision? Also, a lot of WWE babyface acts right now seem to have a strong focus on elements of their entrance. Jay with the waving hand, Seth with the chanting, and Cody with the oh. Do you think this could be a problem and have some diminishing returns down the line? So that's part one of his Jay Uso-related topics. Yeah, any thoughts on Jay not coming out through the crowd?
I honestly didn't even think about it until he said it. It had to have been some sort of a conscious decision. I didn't really even think about it. It kind of, I guess, in a way, but almost, I feel like it almost would have made more sense for him to come up through the crowd and kind of be more like, hey, I'm with you guys on Raw now, you know, and whatever. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure why they would have done it that way, but now I'm questioning it now that it's been pointed out to me.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. But I think the coming out through the crowd thing could be overdone, or fans can eventually become numb to it.
Where was Raw tonight?
Norfolk, Virginia.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. All right. Yeah. I was kind of like thinking like, well, maybe are they maybe in like a city they don't or something like that, or it might be a you know, a bit of a safety concern or something, but not there now.
Although I think the Scope might be the oldest building that WWE goes to anymore. That's been around forever. It's one of the, you know, because they don't have an NBA or NHL team to you know, accelerate the destruction of an otherwise suitable arena for concerts and shows. And so they've got the same building that they've had for a very long time there. A lot of history in that building. Not many buildings with that type of history left. All right, number two from JB. How do we see Jay and Drew playing out next week? I really can't see Jay turning heel this soon, even though Cole specifically said that Jay isn't making any friends. I could see this as the beginning of a Drew heel turn, as seeds of that have already been planted. Could it also be like an MJF Cole situation where they're strongly hinting at a turn, but they come out of the match as babyface friends, and perhaps KO is the one to turn heel at some point? I know a lot of moving parts, and I think there's a lot of directions they could go. With this, the Riddle situation could also be causing them to augment their plans, call some audibles, or at least have a few possibilities in mind that they planted seeds for tonight, not knowing if they're going to have to go with them. Nate, any thoughts on the Jay Drew match next week and where that leads and maybe what the finish options are?
Yeah, so to me, it kind of does seem like Drew's on a heel trajectory, you know, kind of even going back to like, you know, past couple of weeks, but, you know, last week especially where he kind of was questioning Kofi's motives. And I mean, you're questioning Kofi. I feel like Kofi's like the most like, you know, babyface in WWE. So like you're questioning his motives, like, so that, you know, that definitely threw a little bit of a flag out there for me. You know, and then obviously tonight with, you know, him and Xavier Woods back and forth. So I kind of think that's the way that it's leaning is Drew is kind of a heel turn here for Drew. I don't know if it's going to happen necessarily, you know, next week during that match, or if they're going to just kind of hint towards it a little bit more. I'm almost thinking that's kind of the way they go. They hint towards it a little bit more. And then, or at least maybe during the match, and then let's say, you know, Jay picks up a win, and then Drew like flips out that he picked up a win, you know, maybe it was due to some weird interference or, you know, something, you know, but something where Drew shouldn't have lost. And maybe that's kind of the catalyst for, you know, for the heel turn or something along those lines. But that's the way it seems like it's going to go for me is, you know, Drew turning heel. They could do some sort of a swerve where, you know, they, you know, do turn Kevin Owens heel or something like that. But
Well, we still got the mystery of who gets drafted or traded, I should say, to SmackDown.
That's true.
In exchange for Jay. And so, you know, if Drew goes heel or Kevin goes heel or, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about that too.
And they didn't make a big thing of that tonight on Raw, even though it's been a topic of conversation. And so I'm wondering too if it's possible the Riddle situation has a ripple effect on that, and they're kind of just recalibrating. I just don't know. But Drew, I think they've done a really nice job on commentary laying the groundwork to change fans' opinions of Drew, you know, talking about him being a bit of a hothead and he can overreact. And they're showing us first, and then they're underlining it through telling us. And Drew's demeanor is changing, and I like him. You know, I mean, I think he was a great babyface during the pandemic era, the Performance Center era, and I think he is a very good babyface, but I think Cody is doing the Drew babyface act more effectively than Drew was able to do the babyface act lately. And so there's really not a role for Drew to play. I mean, it's just totally duplicating Cody in terms of, you know, the earnest centerpiece babyface. So Drew turning heel makes sense, and there's more fresh matchups for him, and I think he'll be more interesting. So I like the way they're telling the story. They're laying the groundwork for it so that when it happens, you don't feel necessarily shocked. You just go, I feel this is authentic. It's one of the criticisms Todd Martin has had on The Fix about, like, the Edge turn is people know who Adam Copeland is. They don't buy him when he goes into a different role. They're telling a story now with Drew where when he is heel, you're going to be sort of indoctrinated and brainwashed. That sounds too negative. Into seeing Drew in a different way than you have seen with him in recent years otherwise. So I like it.
No, I agree too, because like a lot of the stuff that he did on the indies is Drew Galloway, or when he returned into NXT, and you know, a lot of people, I even forget that he had an NXT run and was the NXT champion for a little while, and that was all a heel run. It was fantastic work. So like, if he's able to bring that to the main roster, I think it's gonna be some great TV.
Yeah. All right, number three from JB. How much do you think that the debut of Aaron Rodgers on the New York Jets for the opening of Monday Night Football will affect Raw ratings? This wasn't a bad show by any means, but I'm not sure there was really anything that would pull a casual fan away from the Monday Night Football opener. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how Aaron Rodgers is going down early in the game will affect the retention of viewers, or if that caused some people to go, okay, nothing to see here, and turn and tune out. So I don't think we're going to get the answer we would have if Aaron Rodgers had played the whole game. Number four, Chelsea Green really seems like the odd person out in the Green, Niven, Baszler, Stark feud. This is probably by design, but I could see it becoming a negative as the seriousness of the feud should intensify. The punches that Baszler and Niven threw at each other in the post-match brawl looked really bad. Yes, they cut away quickly from those punches. Baszler was doing weird worked MMA punches, and yeah, that was awkward. Yeah. Chelsea Green is not meant to be taken seriously, and she's not going to shift into being taken seriously. And but I think she's really entertaining in the role that she's in, and the dynamic with Chelsea and Piper Niven is fun. And but you know, I expect Baszler and Stark to win, and you know, Green to be a comedy figure, and not much more than that. You know, going forward, Nate, what do you think of how they're using Chelsea Green, and what do you think of the Piper Niven Green dynamic right now?
No, I mean, I pretty much agree with you. I think, you know, Chelsea, she's not somebody that you are going to be taking seriously, but you know, she's entertaining. She's fun. Like, I'm not a huge fan of her, like, work in general, really, but, you know, I can certainly see why people are. And I think, you know, for the role that she's been given lately, she's certainly, you know, filling it pretty well. But I also, you know, I like this, the kind of what's going on with her and Piper Niven. I just adore the fact that she's not Doudrop anymore and she's back to being Piper Niven. She's a fantastic performer. But no, I mean, it's kind of like Piper Niven's got the kind of got her backbone back, which is great. It's kind of, you know, going to be interesting to see how that plays out here with Chelsea Green. Shayna Baszler and blanking on her name. The other person.
I'm sorry, who? Zoe Stark?
Thank you, Zoe Stark. Thank you. I'm picturing her in my head clear as day, and I just couldn't get it. You know, her and Zoe Stark, like we talked a bit about in PWT Talks NXT about what they could potentially do with Zoe Stark once she got up to the main roster. And one of the things that we said was put her with Shayna, whether it's in a tag team or opposite Shayna, because you know, very similar styles, you know, kind of hard hitting. You know, they would complement each other very well. So I'm really glad to see the two of them together.
All right, number five, sort of tangentially related to Raw, but seeing Ciampa and Gable together in a multi-man tag match really made me nostalgic for American Aloha and DIY. it'd be nice to inject these two tag teams into the main roster tag division for some much-needed life. Nate, you can respond to that and just talk about how you think they're using Ciampa based on the body of work that you've seen from him in NXT. It's been, you know, a bit of a rocky road for him on the main roster, in part depending on Vince McMahon's influence on things compared to Paul Levesque and what he, you know, how he sees Ciampa and what he's seen Ciampa accomplish. But, you know, Ciampa getting challenged by Adam Pearce to, you know, whatever, you know, get more involved in something heavy, and he is. And I'm intrigued with what they're doing with him right now. How about you?
I'm just glad they're doing something with him. Ciampa is like my guy. He's probably one of my favorite wrestlers. And the fact that like he gets zero pop when he comes out, like, and I'm not talking like booze or he just gets nothing. It crushes me. I like the fact they're doing something with him and kind of giving him a little incentive to kind of do a little bit more on the show, you know, with what you were talking about, that, you know, kind of that Adam Pearce angle there. I just hope he's able to get a little bit more TV time and show some of the edge and you know, the black heart Ciampa that he was able to show in NXT. You know, one of the things they said on commentary tonight, and I think it was Wade that said it on commentary, was, you know, he was a one-man Mount Rushmore of NXT. And, like, 100%, like, you know, he was one of the greatest parts of NXT in, like, what was it, 2015, 2016, him and Johnny Gargano and their feud. Well, not just their feud, but, I mean, first starting with DIY and then moving into their, you know, their feud, which is phenomenal. So he has so much potential where, like, I feel like if they were just to kind of let him roll with what he was doing in NXT as a heel, like, he could go toe to toe, especially on the mic, with, you know, really the best of them. What I think holds him back at this point is his age and the injuries. You know, cause it's no secret. He's, you know, he's kind of getting up there. I think he's closer to 40 than he is 35 at this point. And you know, he's had a series of neck injuries and things like that. So I kind of wonder if that might be, you know, what's holding him back from the main event, because, like, I know Triple H has, like, the utmost faith in him. You know, he said so on, you know, some of the calls we were on, the post NXT takeover calls that we'd be on Triple H, you know, years ago, you'd be raving about Ciampa. So, I think they could do more with him. I'm glad that they're at least doing something with him, but man, I would love for them to get behind him a little bit more to make the fans actually care. I don't feel like he's been in a storyline that anybody's really been able to sink their teeth into in, God, quite some time.
Yeah. All right, number six from JB. Is it a problem that Rhea Ripley's getting a much stronger babyface pops than Raquel? I love the Judgment Day, but how much longer can they keep Rhea heel without running the risk of devaluating all the babyface women they match her up against? I like the idea of her and Raquel doing a double turn and Raquel being Dominic's new mommy. It solves all the issues in one move. Nate, what do you think about that possibility of all the things that they could do is have Ripley turn babyface and then have Tom and Nia Jax have a new chemistry? They're risking it. They're risking something really fun, but fans are into Ripley. I don't know if I was reading into it too much or not, but when they did the backstage interview with Raquel and, you know, the crowd didn't really react to her, it seemed like she sort of noticed, like, when they threw to her, there wasn't much of a crowd reaction. So it is a problem when you have, you know, it's the same thing with Blackpool Comic Club and in AEW. I mean, when fans like the heels, it does undercut, you know, the baby faces in a way that's not really fair to the faces sometimes.
Yeah, that's very true. And not only that, but, like, Raquel, for me, Raquel has never been a great babyface. Like, she's okay, but she's a great heel. Like, it's, we were actually talking a little bit about this on Wrestling Night America last night. We were talking about, you know, the size of wrestler, because the size of a wrestler determined whether you're going to be heel or face. And, you know, kind of the topic of Raquel came up around that. And it's like, I've just always felt like her presence has been, it's always just seems kind of fake and forced as a face. She's always smiling and it just seems, it doesn't seem natural. Like I've seen a lot of back, like, you know, random things on YouTube and things like that. Just, you know, wrestlers just interacting backstage, just goofing around backstage. It's not filmed for WWE. It's just them with their cameras and you know, phones and whatever. And like, she's got a lot of personality and stuff backstage, but it, you know, kind of like in real life, but it doesn't come through for me anyway on screen when she's, you know, when she's a face. As a heel, I feel like it comes through, you know, really well. I don't really want to see them, and this kind of switching gears here. I don't necessarily want to see them split Rhea and Dom up just yet. Or even really period. I love that dynamic so much. But part of it too is that particular couple, Rhea and Dom, like that's actually made it into like mainstream. And like, I'm, you know, I'm in some Facebook groups, like some alternative Facebook groups and things like that, where like nobody's talking about wrestling, but people are posting memes about Rhea Ripley and Dom all the time. So it's like, it's something that I think a lot of people are able to kind of, you know, attach to and relate to and find enjoyment with, even if they're not wrestling fans. So, so yeah, I think that kind of danced around a lot of that, but that's kind of where I fall on it.
Well, they've got Mommy's Always on Top t-shirts to sell too. They can't break them up too quick.
That's yeah.
A wonderful, slogan that they worked into the show tonight. GAB concludes, interesting twist with Nia Jax at the end. Can't say I was the biggest fan of her initial run, but I'm at least a bit intrigued to see where they go with this. Yes, I am too. I am too. Speaking of Nia, Zach in Texas says, this cannot be happening. I must be dreaming. I have to be dreaming, right? WWE did not actually bring Nia Jax back. That's the absolute worst birthday present they could have given me. Why would they bring that woman back? She's an awful wrestler with the charisma of a brick. More importantly, do they need to be reminded of the women she's seriously injured in matches? She's an abject danger to any woman she gets in the ring with. Why would WWE put their women's roster at risk like this? She isn't worth it. What's Triple H going to say when, not if, when she injures someone with her recklessness and ineptitude? What benefit could possibly outweigh the enormous risk associated with bringing that woman back? This decision is wildly, shockingly, appallingly irresponsible. WWE should be ashamed of themselves. So this Zach has emailed about Nia before. He has very has hit some of these same notes before. Obviously, they are bigger fans of hers than Zach, and they are less concerned about her hurting opponents than Zach is. But if she does hurt someone, I mean, that shouldn't be the end of the line, right, Nate?
Yeah, I mean, she may end up hurting somebody. I mean, one of the things that kind of, you know, ring rust, you know, she, I mean, I don't know how much, you know, she's done, you know, in terms of like in-ring work coming back and, you know, getting ready for this return, or, you know, if this was just kind of like she got a call 6 weeks ago and said, hey, you want to come back? So, you know, there is a little bit, I guess, of a concern with that. Like, you know, I think back to like Brie Bella when Brie Bella came back, you know, I think it was 2018 or something like that. And you know, she comes back, she gets in the ring, she immediately knocks out Liv Morgan with a couple yes kicks to the face. She botched a suicide dive, things like that. So I guess with anybody that's kind of like returning, you know, there is that hasn't been in a ring for a while. There's always that little like, you know, question of ring rust, but, and kind of, at least for me, that there's that it's a bit of a bigger question because I do have some of the same concerns. Maybe not, I don't feel quite as passionately as Zach does, but I have some of those same concerns anyway. But you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, she's still a professional. WWE is still a professional company. I don't think they would necessarily put her or any of their talents in a position where, you know, they're going to get hurt based on, you know, somebody's ability. And if they don't think she can do it, then they probably wouldn't put her out there. At least I'd like to think so anyway. So yeah, I'm not super thrilled about seeing her back myself. Matter of fact, and you know, Kelly Wells, Bruce Hazelwood, and I, we have a Twitter chat going where we kind of keep us talk about things throughout the course of the week up leading up to PWT Talks NXT. And I typed in like Nia Jax is back, and I basically ruined both of their nights. So that's kind of a general consensus. Nobody seems to like it so far.
I want to give some attention to the Shinsuke Nakamura promo tonight. He is delightful right now with his facial expressions, body language. He's always had an X factor, and allowing him to speak, but I'll have the translations and closed captions underneath allows him to express himself more effectively, more convincingly. There's more resonance to what he says, even if we have to read the words on the screen in English. And that came across even later when he was beating up Ricochet and he had to speak in English, and it was a little bit tougher. And half of what you're doing is, what did he say? I didn't quite pick up on his wording there, as opposed to just enjoying his facial expression. So I think they're doing a good job elevating Shinsuke and showing, you know, if somebody's got talent and they've been underutilized or just kind of, off to the side doing something, WWE can be good at heating people up. And I think they found a way to heat up Shinsuke. I also alluded to it earlier with Seth talking about his past the way Kevin Owens did. I want to get your thoughts, Nate, on what I thought was an interesting promo from Seth, talking about, the journey that he was on and how what he called his current persona a facade. But then it turned out people liked to sing a song and made him feel like he could be more of his authentic self. It was interesting. It felt like he was kind of addressing some criticism and acknowledging criticism of him in the past, which is, I remember being on Steve Austin's podcast where Steve would say, what is Seth freaking Rollins? What is he? How would you describe him or define him? It's not really a thing. Stone Cold Steve Austin, you could, start rattling off, no pun intended, multiple. Sort of this cackling guy, a zone that felt like it was him. This was him kind of making his argument. This is who I am now, and the fans are attached to me because I've grown into figuring out who I am, and it is some bombast and showmanship mixed with a desire to be the best and a relentless drive to go at full speed and accomplish as much as I can in the years that I have. And I thought it was a really interesting and different, more relatable promo from him, in that it seemed like there was a goal there to kind of stake out who he is. And it was, in the context of eventually saying, I can look my daughter in the eye. And cause Shinsuke's brought his family into it. So Nate, any thoughts on what I said or any thoughts on the segment in general?
So right when you first started talking, you were talking about Shinsuke and you said something about words on the screen and you gave me PTSD. That out there. I really dig what they've been doing with both Shinsuke and Seth. Like the fact that last week, Seth's promo, he kind of started talking about I mentioned earlier tonight, his promo, he was talking he kind of became a father and a husband and was kind of bringing shades of that into his character. And then tonight, you were talking about it was definitely interesting, and I liked the fact that he did address a lot of those prior criticisms. The fact that he says, I didn't know who I was, the first thing that went through my mind was that podcast with you and you and Steve did. And I vividly remember that conversation, who is Seth Rollins? And we found that out over the years, this current incarnation of Seth Rollins, and it's like I've found enjoyment out of it, but it's mostly like, okay, what crazy outfit's he going to be wearing today? And that's kind of like my thing, like the cackling, over the top laughing, like I find it kind of cringe inducing and eye rolling for the most part. But it's, it's still kind of fun and whatnot. But the fact where, that he kind of addressed the fact that he was the architect And then, you know, he started, he became the Messiah, and that didn't quite work for him. So now, you know, he started dressing a little bit. He didn't use the word flamboyant, but that's the word I'm going to use here. He started dressing a little bit more flamboyantly and over the top. And, you know, and then he did call that a facade, which I thought was a little strange, calling this current persona that you've been using like a mask to kind of hide your true self. So I'm wondering, at that point, can you even go back to that character, or is this completely just a new evolution of Seth Rollins, which, I mean, I'm fine with. I mean, you got to keep your character fresh and, you know, currently constantly evolving to stay relevant. So I really liked this. It kind of, like you said, he addressed a lot of the criticisms of himself or that were thrown his way in the past, but then also took the current character and then kind of tied it to reality. So I think they did a really good job there. When with Shinsuke, you know, one of my favorite things that Shinsuke ever did was that whole no speak a English angle, right? It was so dumb, but like, it just came across to me as like, oh man, you're just such an a-hole, you know? And that's kind of, I feel like they're channeling some of that again here, you know, with him kind of playing those mind games with Seth, you know, saying, no, I'm going to face you when I want to, kind of giving, breathing some new life into Shinsuke. You know, Shinsuke is an amazing talent, you know, back down at NXT, a two-time NXT champion. He was like, when he debuted in NXT was, just huge, huge moment, you know, for the brand back then. The fact that he's never won a world title on the main roster, like, still shocks me. From my old 2016, 2017 NXT perspective, it's very surprising, but I don't think he's necessarily going to beat Seth for the title. I'd love to see it, but I think he's playing a really good foil for Seth right now. And I really like this kind of character that they've slotted him into.
Nate, is there anything else from Raw that you want to bring up that we haven't covered yet that maybe is on your mind or in any notes you took?
Oh man. Nothing else I can think of off the top of my head. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm pretty content. So why don't we wrap up there? Thank you, Nate, so much. Good conversation. Fun that there were some NXT things to talk about too, to play into your general focus and beat here at PW Torch. So pleasure having you on again.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Looking forward to talking with everybody again tomorrow night on PWT Talks NXT. Tiffany Stratton, Becky Lynch. Let's do it.
Absolutely. And I'll talk with all of our listeners on the flagship with Jason Paul tomorrow, Wade Keller podcast at pwtorch.com. Send your questions and comments. And then I'll be by Wednesday night after Dynamite to review the AEW midweek show, their A show, I guess it's safe to say. And Joel Tonello will be joining me as co-host on Wednesday. Thanks, Nate. Thanks to our callers, emailers, and, of course, our listeners, and we'll talk to you all next time.